103.2 Dublin City FM. Friday, 3 p.m. Gardeners all over the world listening to The Sod Show with Peter Donegan. Or 3.2 Dublin City FM. Good afternoon to you. It's Brian Green and Peter Donegan with The Sod Show until 3:30 on the airwaves of Dublin. Coming up on today's show, we have an interview with Olin McNeice. He's from Dan Kelly Cider. If you think it's, you know, that kind of end of the week time and you're thinking about thirst quenching your week's thirst with a nice cool drink of cider, we have an interview that won't quench your thirst, but it will tell you all about growing apples and some of the problems that have to be surmounted. That's coming up in a few moments' time. First of all, let me tell you that we are available to be contacted at Sodshow on Twitter, The Sodshow on Facebook, info@sodshow.com is the email address. You can catch us during the week on the web. We're at sodshow.com, where we have the last 4.5 years of Sodshows available for download. If you want to try out one of the old ones, give it a whirl and maybe you get one of those random ones and check it out. Also, you can listen back to what you missed last week here on The Sod Show. Coming up today, we also have a Sod Show Song of the Week. We have a Song of the Week nearly every week, but this week it's a song by an artist I've never played before. I have never in 30 and a half years on the radio played Louise Morrissey. Today I will, and she'll be joined by Martin Byrne at a quite a good song, which has got a connection to gardening. You have to wait to find out what that connection is. So let's get to the outdoors, where the Sod Show likes to be. And Peter Donegan has microphone in hand. And who is he talking to?
Friday afternoon, 3 o'clock, and we are in the company of...
Olin McNeice from Dan Kelly Cider.
Olin McNeice. So two things. Number one, Dan Kelly Cider. Dan Kelly, is it a kind of a, well, you know, a made up name because Dan Kelly sounds a bit like an Irish kind of a fella, or is it just a genius marketing ploy?
A genius marketing ploy. No. The reality is Dan Kelly is my great grandfather. He was a Belfast man who drove a steam train, and he used to go on the Dublin Belfast line, which runs through our orchard in Drogheda, and we've been growing apples there since 1962 when my father bought that farm. So it would have always had some apples on it, and my father planted some more. So it's just a nice coincidence that my great-grandfather, Dan Kelly, worked for the Great Northern Railway. And when my father bought the farm, he bought it from a family, the Cairns family in Drogheda, who were on the board of the Great Northern Railway and were also brewers in Drogheda. So it kind of comes around full circle.
I'm gathering, therefore, that you started originally as orchard growers or apple growers. Is that a fair...?
Yeah, no, we're multi-generation growers of apples from Armagh. My father moved from Armagh in 62. Our farm manager on the farm, he has seen actually 4 generations of ourselves growing apples. My grandfather used to help out. My father, obviously, who bought the farm, myself. And, you know, whilst the kids are a bit young, they've been put to work. They've been, you know, making cartons for apples and cider and all sorts. And, yeah, so, we you know, our farm manager's seen 4 generations of us grow apples there and many generations before that in County Armagh.
Okay, we've had this conversation before, in short, but let's try and simplify this down to a slightly different matter. And we'll get back to the cider in just a minute. But when I walk into the supermarket, and I know the answer to this because I would have spent time picking apples in orchards, there is a way to pick an apple.
Yeah, there is a way, and nobody ever listens to me. You know, it's incredible. Every year we take in a good few, you know, casual staff for apple picking. And mostly myself and my father would kind of stay out of the orchard now because it's very frustrating. But no, there's a way to pick an apple. You know, you get it into the palm of your hand. You don't let your fingers clench around it. Twist it off. It comes off easy. It's much gentler on the apple. It happens to be much easier for the person picking the apples, but nobody ever listens. You know, I think we have plenty of experience. We should, you know, they should listen to us, but they don't. But yeah, you have to be very gentle with apples.
It's never with the tip of your fingers, and it's always with the inside of the ball of your hand or the back of your knuckles is the answer. And what? And here's the pub quiz question round. Does it annoy you when you walk into a supermarket and you see apples that you know are put on the shelf, let's say the day before, and they've got dinky black bruises going around from you know somebody just picked one up and then put it back down again.
And this is the problem. People always seem to think there's a better apple in the bottom of the crate, you know. And they pick up every apple and they root around and they mess around. And it's not really the supermarket's fault because they actually get them in pristine order for the most part. But just people hoking through them and just mess them up, you know.
It's funny, and to be fair, there is a point for those of you listening at home where there's a reason why I don't play golf. I tried it once. I think I threw the golf clubs into the bottom of the lake on the first hole because I got critical of the grass. So it's anybody who's involved in the industry, and I'm sure people in the computer industry maybe listen to some podcasts, would get mildly irate if the plug was put on back to front or, I don't know, some kind of UX code that my good mate Anthony McGuinness does. The stem, pardon the cliched pun, in to cider growing, can I ask why?
Well, you know, we have a tradition of growing apples, and on the farm we would always have made a little bit of cider for personal consumption, and some of the staff would have made cider, and you know, some more than others would have made cider through the years. So we always knew about the cider and making cider. And I suppose in more recent years we kind of thought that it's a nice the marketplace is open for a nice quality cider, like the craft beers and so on and so forth. You know, we supply Bulmers from the farm as well, and they've, you know, done a fantastic job to open up the whole cider industry, not only in Ireland, the UK, Australia, America even. They've really had an influence. So they've done a fantastic job. Our products are a wee bit different. You know, it's, you know, we have no additives whatsoever to it, and that's what we want to do. And, you know, there's a place in the market for all range of products. So, you know, we have a nice natural cider, wild yeast fermentation, nice and slow and cool ferment, no chemicals whatsoever in our cider. And that's the way we want to present it.
And for those at home who are thinking, hold on a second, I want to get the children touched. I want to recycle my Wellington boots. I'm going to put solar panels on my grandmother. And I might just try and grow a few apple trees at home. They walk into the local super duper supermarket store and they see a fine apple there. Is there a particular variety that people should be going for?
A lot of our apple is Bramley. We have 20 different varieties. Some of the ones that I prefer, and it's all a personal taste, some of the ones I prefer are the more interesting varieties like Cox's Orange Pippins. Elstar tends to go very well for us. You know, you have nice, Braeburn tends to, you know, store quite well for us. So you have nice varieties. Elstar is a lovely balance of sweetness and acidity. As a dessert apple, that's lovely. For a cooking apple, you know, we have three different varieties of cooking apples. Bramley's our biggest variety, and, you know, it would be my favourite as well. It depends on what you want. If you want an apple tree in your back garden, you want to know, you know, why do you want it? Do you want to make apple pies? Do you want to have a nice apple to eat? Lots of nice varieties. Elstar is one of them. And then people think, obviously, there's a very famous apple, Pink Lady. You know, Pink Lady is what's called a club apple. You're not allowed to grow that unless you have a license with the breeder and so on. So forget about that. But if you get a nice Elstar, you'll have lots of very nice fruits. And it seems to do well enough in Ireland.
Pruning of apple trees, you could probably do it with your eyes closed at this stage of the game.
If you and I went out and looked at the same tree, you would prune it differently from me. You just see something different in the tree, and it's almost a personal thing. I'm not going to say it's a work of art or anything like that, but it's a personal interpretation of where you want to see the tree growing. What you're trying to do is encourage young wood into your tree to have that fruit bud and to give you a crop. And you're trying to encourage lateral growth in the branches to try and produce fruit. If you let a tree grow to the sky, it'll just keep growing that way and never give you a crop. So, you know, it's trying to shape the tree to your will and to try and make a crop. And that's basically the basis of how you approach pruning. And as I say, everybody will do it differently.
Sideshow bingo round. First things that I would do in pruning a tree is removal of diseased wood. You would do second?
So, yeah, removal of diseased wood, removal of the branches that are growing vertically. It will never give you anything. They will absorb all the energy out of the tree and they'll never give you fruit. So remove diseased wood if you have any canker in the tree and take out that vertical growth. And depending on, you know, the styles of pruning would have changed so much through the years. We would have had our older population of trees. They would have cut the central leader out and stunted it that way and took off three or four laterals. The more modern style of pruning would be to let the central leader go up, take off two or three different tiers off it and open up the tree that way. So, you know, the style, everything evolves and the style of doing it changes. And I do think that more modern style of letting the central leader up and taking off a couple of tiers, that's the way forward. And particularly for the back garden grower who wants to do something and have a manageable tree, that would certainly be the way forward.
Many acres are we talking here to produce, and what I guess is the output on that into what is essentially now the finished product?
Well, basically our farm is about 200 acres. 80 acres of that is orchard. We now do an annual open day for charity at Blossom Time and May Bank Holiday Weekend. One of the things we did last year was we went around and counted the apple trees to have a little competition to give away some hampers. So I kind of needed the exercise, and I got up each morning and went up and down each row to see if there's any missing. And we have 14,307 apple trees. So it's a largest orchard by Irish standards. What we will typically store around about 1,000 tons of Bramley for the rest of the year in our stores. We'll also store some dessert fruit, and then we'll probably let away some of the windfalls and other outgrades that we have. We let that away for cider manufacturers, either Bulmers or others. So, you know, we will store about 1,000 tons of Bramley and you know, a few hundred tons of dessert fruit as well.
This all you're talking about storing, obviously when I was growing up, one of eight children, 1980s Ireland, before we knew what compost heaps were, it was just that pile down the back of the garden as far as we were all concerned. And landscaping was a concrete path to the washing line, if you remember that. Long before log roll pandemics ever came to town, and that's long before decking ever came around, my good mans. But, you know, I remember Mum and Dad used to wrap up the two apple trees that we had at the back, which were essentially Bramleys. The only pruning they got was me and my brother climbing up them and breaking a few branches off, and Dad had a bow saw for pruning things, and that was it. But we used to wrap them up in newspaper. Wax paper?
Yeah, either. Yeah, the older ways would have had different ways of doing it, but essentially what we do now is that we try to control the temperature, and we also try to control the atmosphere. So our Bramleys will be stored in, this year we're at 2% oxygen. What we are breathing now is about 21% oxygen. In those rooms are so airtight, they're down to 2% oxygen. Other years there might be 1% oxygen. And that's basically to try and help control the ripening, the respiration of the fruit, and it's to help to control a skin disorder that can happen in cold storage. So we let the CO2 get up and we take the oxygen down, and it basically just balances off, and it's almost like putting, it's like throttling the fruit. It's slowing down the rate of respiration and stopping them from ripening so much. And it's very technical. It can be stressful at times. There's lots of things that can go wrong. Bramley in particular is kind of a 12-month apple. It's pretty much unique to Ireland and England, and we don't have the hemispheres changing to give you a different supply of fruit. So we have to store 12 months of the year, and that's how we do it. Low temperature, about 4.5 degrees, 1 or 2% oxygen, and 5 or 6% CO2, and the balance is nitrogen. So it's quite technical.
Peter pauses for a breath, and that's my in. I can come in and play the song of the week. And here on 103.2 Dublin City FM, it's time for a first in radio for me. It's time to play something from Louise Morrissey. She's joined on this song by a good friend of the Sod Show's, Martin Byrne. And the Sod Show garden connection with this song, the song's called The Roses in My Garden. Have a listen. We'll be straight back with Peter in a few.
Somewhere in between, my head is saying that you end up with a season of apple trees coming into flower, which would, let's say, be around about May-ish, June. You've then got fruit coming on the trees around about.
Well, so we just where we are in Drogheda, we're very close to the sea, we're very close to the river, and we're not that high up, so we're probably quite early. We actually would tend to find our blossom would be, you know, kind of contemporaneous to the guys down in the south of Ireland, in Tipperary, Waterford. Even some of the local farms in North County Dublin would be later than us, and the north would be later than us. So our blossoms are around the May Bank Holiday weekend. They'll grow through the summer. The first apples we will harvest are called Discovery. It's an eating apple. That'll be mid-August. And then we move on to Catcha. That's late August. Then we move into some of our earlier variety cooking apples. We move to Bramley then. We leave eating apples alone, just the way our farm is set up. We leave them alone until we come back around towards Halloween. And then we have the nice, what I would consider a more interesting varieties, like Cox's, Elstar. And then our latest variety will be November, and it was too late, but we even picked them into December. So our harvest season goes from August to November, more or less, but the bulk of it will be September, October.
So do you find then, and I'm gathering that let's say you pick X amount of Elstar, and you know, in my own garden, I think of about 35 fruit and trees, but you know, I find one year that the Bramleys have a great year, the Elstars have a bad year, and it tends to alternate between the two. And I'm, you know, I know it's all kind of, you know, you might say mechanical, or in brackets, the two damn dogs and a five-year-old throwing a stick through the middle of the trees and knocking half the blossoms off it, and you're kind of going, right, that's we're down on apple tarts, but we've got lots in the lunchboxes this year. Yeah. There's maybe an element to that about it. Does that affect then, in the taste of the end product, which is essentially Dan Kelly's cider, does it affect because you might have a higher proportion of Bramley to, let's say, Elstars, just to pick the two?
Well, as it happens, in it kind of, for what we use for Dan Kelly cider, Bramley would be the smaller part of it. It helps us blend in some acidity, which we need to stabilize the product. So it's a blend of different types of apples, of which we will always have, well, you know, at the moment we have enough of each of them. The flavors will change, not because we add or subtract any more of one variety or other, but that the flavors will be slightly different in each season. Also, we use, you know, we just use wild yeast, and that changes the flavor a little bit as well. So that's a matter of trying to blend out. But going back to the point of, you know, one being stronger than the other over, you know, one season to the next, it just can happen that, for instance, Elstar, you know, the blossom might get hit with a small frost, whereas the Bramley didn't, because the blossom will be at different times. Some trees get a little bit biennial. They'll crop very heavily one year, and the next year they won't do very much. We obviously try to control that as best as possible, you know, through our pruning techniques, harvesting techniques. But you can't affect nature. So if nature decides to throw a frost at you, and it happens to catch some of your varieties, like we have 20 varieties on the farm, it might catch some varieties and not catch others. So that's also part of what you have to deal with. And it's a fact of life as a grower, and, you know, stress about it all you want, you're not going to change it. You know, that's just it.
The winter of discontent, as we know it on the Sod Show, was the winter of 2010-11, minus 18 Celsius on Christmas Day. How did that affect you? Were you battered to the hilt? Did you look out the window and go, oh my God, there go the school shoes. So, honey, you better get them resold.
No, not a bit. Doesn't... A good cold hard winter would be actually sanitary for an orchard. It would help to kill off any inoculum that's there, any disease that's there. It'll actually help to kill it. Apple trees are hardwoods. They don't mind that. They're dormant at that point anyway. So the only thing it killed was all those palm trees and cordylines around the country. And that might not have been a bad thing in lots of instances. You know? So you know, for us, it didn't do us any harm. Not a bit.
And on the cordyline note, I have a good neighbour of mine who it bed it to a pulp, and he cut it down, threw it in underneath one of the hedgerows, and you'll never guess what, the thing sprouted up because Google geotropism and you'll understand what happened when you threw the log underneath the hedges. In your own case at home, I gather there's children and a good lady behind the scenes. I have the nod of approval on that. Is it a case of that your wife turns around and says, if I see one more apple, hell's going to fall out of the sky here. Don't you dare bring one of them into my house. What, you want an apple tart for your birthday cake? I'm going to batter you with a bottle.
You've heard the expression cobbler shoes. My wife is blue in the face asking me to bring apples down from the cold stores for the kids for the lunch boxes, and because I'm always around them, it just doesn't seem to register. So it probably has to ask me a week in advance to bring apples down to the house. But no, the kids love apples, thankfully. I'm told by my own father that when I was a kid I ate nothing but apples, and you know, I still have very, very fond memories of, and I know it wouldn't be allowed today, but I can remember as a very young kid sitting on the back of the trailers, bringing the apples from the orchard up into the yard. And the particular variety, the earliest variety we have, is called Discovery. It's a very fragrant apple. It's a beautiful, sweet little apple. It's got terrible shelf life, but it's a lovely little apple when it's ripe. And I can just remember eating loads and loads of Discovery sitting on the back of the trailer. Not something that you'd probably advise to young kids now, you know, modern times. But, you know, those are my memories. And my wife's from the Basque Country in Spain, and they have quite an apple tradition up there as well. So, no, she's very happy to see the kids eating, you know, nice apples. And, you know, apple is not a bad word in our house, no.
Okay, to the nice part of it, and obviously we've kind of come a little bit full circle, and it's nice to hear the genuine behind-the-scenes story that some of you may not fully be aware of while you're listening to this in podcast or live, I should say. But to the bit where you said, I have a cunning plan, Baldrick, to quote Blackadder. I think we should make cider. Did people anyone turn around and go, he's lost it. He's finally lost the plot. And when you did do that and it became in the first bottle, I guess two questions. How proud of a moment was it? And what was the tasting?
Well, as I say, we've always made a little bit of cider. And probably going back a few years, maybe 20-odd years ago, I kind of thought, you know, we should make cider and so on and so forth. And my father wouldn't have been... probably wouldn't have been too keen on that at the time, and looking back on it, it was probably just about right. You know, an 18-20-year-old with an unlimited supply of cider, who knows how it could have turned out. You know, it could have all been so different. But no, I think when we worked through it and we had different batches, and you're bottling up and you're watching what it does in bottle, because we don't add any chemicals to it, you watch it change a little bit even in bottle, and to get to a product that you think you hope the market will like. You know, yes, it's work, but yes, as you say, it's also a proud moment to put your label on a bottle and to put it out there and to have people like it and recognise it. And to the same degree, whilst that's a very proud moment, you know, I've been into customers and I kind of said, you know, well, do you like to have it or whatever else? And if they tell you, oh, well, I didn't really like it, it actually hurts. You know, as much as it's proud when somebody kind of criticizes or whatever, it's a little bit hurtful at times as well. But that's what you're, when you make something, you're open to both praise and criticism. But, you know, it's a nice thing. It's a nice proud moment. You know, we know what we do. We know that we don't add additives to it. We're very proud of that. And we can stand there hand on heart and say to people, look, try this. There is no additives in this. There are no additives, and you know it'll be much kinder to you. So, yes, it's a proud moment. We're happy with what we're doing. Was there a moment when people said you were mad? Yeah, probably, but sure that wouldn't be unusual, you know.
As Tom Jones would like to say, indeed. I remember building a garden once, and I stood away from the crowd. It was on public view, and I had one gentleman in particular come up and criticise me for the garden, which is allowed, as you just noted. But when I was standing at the back of the crowd, pretending to be one of the viewers, but there were three ladies having a conversation explaining how much they liked it to each other and why they liked it, and they didn't know who I was, and I didn't know who they were, and it was a lovely moment. Have you had that?
Yes.
Have you had that?
I've had that, yeah, absolutely. It is lovely when you hear people talking about it and saying, I like that, and you know, it does make you feel very proud. It's something that you've created. It's something that you've worked for. And, you know, to have that reaction is absolutely terrific. You know, and it kind of affirms why you went out to do it in the first place. And, but as you say, part of it is also that you have to accept the criticism. And it's never nice, but perhaps it's a bit more constructive. Whatever way it's delivered, perhaps you learn more from the criticism than actually from the praise. So, you know, it's a constant thing. It has to constantly evolve, and we understand that, and we just hope that we just hope people like it, and we can continue to do a good job. That's what we're trying to do.
If people want to find out more, if people want to go and get a taste, have you a website? How do they get in touch? How do they find out?
So yeah, we tend to do some events out around the country and around the city and so on, and you know, we have our website, dankellycider.com. We're also the same again on Facebook and Twitter, where we let people know what we're doing new or where we're going to be. You know, we have a list of stockists there, and you know, alternatively, we're on the farm in Drogheda, and we hope to have, we're not sure yet, but we hope to have another open day closer to harvest time. And if we have, you know, people come along and taste the ciders just like they did at blossom time. So, you know, we're starting to get pushed out there a little bit and get stocked a bit more.
Excellent stuff. Okay, listen, with thanks to Bord Bia for this putting this interview together, and to the crew at Dan Kelly Cider. Thank you so much for your time. Been a real genuine pleasure.
Thank you very much. Thanks indeed.
Our thanks to Olin McInnes and, as always, to our producer, Peter Donegan, who brings that microphone just about everywhere. I hope he has it insured. Our thanks to Bord Bia, who made it all possible down in the park, and they just keep on doing it. Thanks, lads. If you want to get in touch, @Sodshow on Twitter. And during the week, if you want to get in touch, just drop us an email, info@sodshow.com. Stay tuned to Dublin City FM here on 103.2. We're back next Friday at 3 p.m. Take care. From myself, Brian Green, and him, Peter Donegan, Katrina Redmond on the blogs. Have a great week. Take care. Bye-bye.